We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. willpledge.org. Now here's your program.
Healthy eating is our topic this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn, so glad you could be with us this afternoon. Licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is our guest today. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. And here on the first day of February, the first day of American Heart Month, we're going to talk about heart health. That's one of the topics we'll take up today. We look forward to your questions for Susan. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move. She works with clients of all ages and athletes on enhancing health, fitness, and sports performance. She's an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. She's also consulting sports dietitian for Illini Athletics, and she leads nutrition and cooking classes at the ARC. The ARC is the Activities and Recreation Center on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You'll find our guest, Susan Kundrat, on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net and www.rkteamnutrition.net. Questions about diet and nutrition are invited this afternoon, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Good to see you. Welcome back.
Good to be here. It's a beautiful day.
Happy Heart Month.
Same to you.
Okay. So before we have folks to talk with this afternoon who join us on the telephone, what would you like to begin with?
Well, I think when we think about Heart Month, two things come to mind primarily. One of them is making sure you know what your blood cholesterol levels are or your lipid levels. We would, you know, might call them lipid levels or your blood levels of fats. Because that's one indicator of your risk of heart disease. And the other thing is to make sure you know your blood pressure. And that's another risk factor for heart disease if your blood pressure is high. And those are two things that can often be modified by diet. And so if we're really trying to say, well, what can we do? What's a real practical thing that we can do to try to lower our risk of heart disease? We know that, of course, exercise is important. We know not smoking is important. Just being a little bit more active is important. And then when we think about it from the diet standpoint, we look at trying to maintain a good healthy weight because that's a big risk. And it only makes sense if you're carrying extra weight that that may be harder on your heart as well. And then I think the other two areas that we can delve into more today when we have time is looking at cholesterol, what it is, and how do we lower that. And then also, how do we lower blood pressure diet-wise if we have high blood pressure? How do we keep it low?
Okay. Are the two things linked in terms of what you can do in terms of diet and exercise to lower cholesterol and blood pressure?
They are linked in that many things that you do can benefit both. For example, for a lot of people, if they are overweight and they do get on a plan that helps them lose weight as a byproduct of how they're eating and exercising, sometimes even 5 or 10 pounds weight loss can lower blood cholesterol and lower blood pressure. So getting in a good healthy weight range for people might automatically put them in a better place lipid-wise and blood pressure-wise. And I certainly see that almost every time with clients who have high blood pressure. Sometimes the lipids don't go down quite as much, but almost always with high blood pressure, if you can drop some weight, that lowers blood pressure for people if it is related, you know, to what they're eating and related to their weight. So the other thing that definitely lowers your risk is eating more produce. And so adding more fruits and vegetables, we can talk a little bit more about that too, is really, really a big benefit because more fruits and vegetables means you're generally going to get more potassium. And we know for most people, unless they're on a particular medication where they need to monitor their potassium intake, increasing potassium as you lower sodium can lower blood pressure. Hmm. So automatically getting more potassium with more fruits and vegetables is helpful. And just adding more fiber makes us feel more full. So usually we eat more fruits and vegetables. We generally drop our calorie intake, which helps us lose weight. And then, of course, all the additional benefits from particular fruits and vegetables and the antioxidants and how they can be helpful with decreasing problems in the body, helping repair tissue in the body, repair cells in the body, are very beneficial, particularly for cholesterol, but also for blood pressure.
Now, are there fruits and vegetables that are particularly helpful?
Well, ones that I would look at most would be particularly berries, because there's been a lot of indication that berries themselves are very high in certain antioxidants. We always think of blueberries, and blueberries helping with not only brain, we know it can maybe help with our brain and how we think and things, but also because of those very concentrated antioxidants that may be helpful with the cells in general. And if you're repairing cells, you don't have as much damage in your cells, that certainly may be helpful in terms of the heart. So I think about berries, I think about purple grapes and dark purple grape juice, because there have been a number of studies showing better blood flow in the body if you take in these concentrated antioxidants, some studies on cherries, but a lot of studies on the Concord grape juice. So, for example, I had a client last week, and one thing that we looked at doing was adding just a cup of purple grape juice every day to her diet, because that's a simple thing to do. She's one of her concerns is that she does have some areas where she has stenosis in her arteries. And so the blood flow is compromised because of that. And sometimes, of course, there'll be surgery for that. Sometimes someone's not a candidate for surgery. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to find ways to keep your blood pressure down and help the arteries if they can be. Blood can flow better. And some studies show arteries are more pliable with eating certain foods. You know, taking out some of that saturated fat and putting in more of the good fats that may help with that too. Sometimes different clients may need certain foods that might help keep the blood thin, because that can be helpful with decreasing your risk of clotting. And so certain foods like fish oil, for example, fish, salmon, tuna, herring, those types of fatty fish. And sometimes using a fish oil supplement in addition can be helpful, because that lowers the inflammation in the body, but also may keep the blood so that it's not as apt to clot. So, of course, when you're eating foods that are more medicinal like that, and sometimes they're on top of other medications you're using with those things too, that you always just want to make sure if you're adding anything in supplement form, that is in combination with what you're doing with your physician or your healthcare provider, because mm-hmm. sometimes that'll make the medication work better or not work as well. Or you know, in this case, if you add things like garlic and you add fish oil and you add these things that are blood thinners and you're already on a blood thinner, then it may be too much of a blood thinner. So anything that you're really using for a medicinal purpose should be in your chart with your physician, and that should be okay, because you don't want to go overboard on one way or the other, even if it is a food-based item.
Yeah. How often are physicians working with dietitians these days?
Well, I think physicians who really understand how important diet is, and that's most physicians, I hope, have access to a dietitian. I think one of the challenges is sometimes there isn't access. There aren't dietitians at every hospital, or maybe if physicians aren't aware of where they can send someone. My experience is, you know, I'm in a natural food store, so I'm in a little different spot where I see my clients, but I get a lot of physicians referred to me directly there, and I know a lot of physicians might be on their own, but they refer to the local hospitals or clinics mm-hmm. because there are dietitians there, and there are dietitians on campus, and there mm-hmm. there are a lot of dietitians in our community, fortunately, a lot of places that people can go. But there are a lot of times I'll work with clients who say, I have this problem, but I really wasn't aware that I could go see a dietitian, or there's still a bit of a concern with some health insurance plans that not everything is covered by, you know, not all the nutrition education is covered by the health insurance. And yeah. So that is a challenge sometimes, too.
Yeah. Although if you're talking about preventing surgery and preventing prescription drugs, it might be something very worthwhile to do is to come up with a plan with your physician, with a dietitian, and then also, you know your pharmacist.
Exactly. And that's really the best way to work together, because there's no question. We have loads and loads of data to indicate that if people drop their cholesterol diet-wise and exercise-wise, that saves money. That saves money for the healthcare in general, of course. And if you can prevent going on a medication by doing these things, that's a huge help. I've worked with many, many clients who've made significant changes and have particularly gotten off a blood pressure medication, because that seems to be a little easier to get off than some of the medication that lowers cholesterol. But there are a lot of clients who can get off cholesterol-lowering medications, too, if they can make enough changes in their diet. There are also those who their lipids are so high, it'll help what they do diet-wise, but they may not get off their meds. Or it may be that they've been on their medication so long that then it becomes very difficult to get off them without your lipids going real high. But there have been a lot of studies that have come out in the recent years looking at how food combines with medication to even make your meds work better. So, for example, if somebody's on a lipid-lowering medication and now they start what we would call a portfolio diet, which may include nuts and seeds and cholesterol-lowering margarines and more fruits and vegetables and kind of a combination of oat fiber and different things, and you get on a particular plan, even if you can't get off your meds, maybe you can decrease the amount of medication you're on, which is so much better for the body. And so I would encourage people to think, if they're on a lipid-lowering medication, to still be encouraged that there might be more you can do diet-wise. Of course, sometimes people will not want to make changes in diet and go on the med and think that that's fine. But we know that even if you're on the medication, if you still eat certain foods that help make your arteries more pliable, like purple grape juice, that's an additional benefit to the medication. Or if you're on the medication and you start using the stanol ester margarines, things like the Take Control margarine or Benecol or the different margarines that also lower cholesterol, then you may have your lipids drop another 10 or 20 points, which is significant. That lowers your risk of heart disease, even if you've already dropped it with the medication. So generally, there are things you can do on top of what you might be doing with the medication.
Okay. Well, let's talk about fats, because you mentioned nuts and seeds, and they contain fats. But what we're talking about here is a reasonable quantity of nuts and seeds. And we're talking about things that contain so-called good fats.
That's right. And it's more thinking about in terms of what we would consider the Mediterranean diet. When we think about the Mediterranean diet, we, of course, think of things like red wine and a lot of fruits and vegetables, a lot of salads, a lot of nuts and seeds and olive oil and things like that. So that's not a low-fat diet by any means. And so you do want to think that if you do have high cholesterol or heart disease, it doesn't necessarily mean all of a sudden cut out all the fat. And I'll often have clients come to me and say, well, I got this list, and maybe that's all they were given was a list of foods high in fat and a list of foods to eat. And that's a good start, because it may be if you're eating a lot of French fries and burgers and things like that, you do need to cut down on those foods. But sometimes nuts and peanut butter is listed on the high-fat side to cut down on, and that's not necessarily the case. In many studies, adding more nuts and seeds, that good type of fat that's more monounsaturated that actually helps the body, can help lower cholesterol, and it may help increase good cholesterol or HDL. And so it is very true that things like avocados, olive oil, olives, although the salt can be an issue with those, nuts and seeds and nut butters, particularly natural nut butters that don't have a lot of salt and sugar added to them, can be a real great addition if you have heart disease or if you have high cholesterol, if you have high blood pressure, because those foods can really be a benefit. And so we're looking not only at things like salmon or things we would naturally think of that's really good fat, but the nuts and seeds can be really helpful, especially things like walnuts, which are extremely high in omega-3 fatty acids. Almonds, we usually think of almonds as being a good benefit. Pistachios, there have been a few good studies on pistachios lately too. But sunflower seeds, and I did bring a handout on flax.
Right.
Because flax we would think of more as it's basically a small little seed. And flax has a lot of ALA, which is alpha-linolenic acid, which is an essential omega-3 acid. It's a little different. The fat in flax is a little different, put together not quite the same way as fatty fish, but it's still really beneficial. And there are other fatty acids, EPA and DHA, that are also can be synthesized into this good fatty acid, and flax oil is a real good source. And so you could use flax oil in salad dressings or add that to food, but also I would recommend people start out by just using the ground flax itself. So flax is these little seeds. You can get golden flax that looks a little more yellow, or the brown flax seeds. And you can buy them in the actual seed package, where they would be a common thing you'll find anywhere is probably like a Bob's Red Mill. That's something that you'll see mm-hmm. in most grocery stores now. And you can buy them in the packages, or you can buy them in what you'd call flaxseed meal or ground flax. And that's already ground up, and so the fats are exposed, and you would buy that package and you would keep it in your refrigerator, because mm-hmm. that would be, it would turn rancid if you just kept it out. And maybe start by adding a couple teaspoons a day to food. It might be that you'd add it to yogurt, or a great way to add oatmeal in the morning. If you've got high cholesterol, oatmeal is super because it's a gummy fiber. So maybe you make oatmeal in the morning and you add a little bit of walnuts or nuts, and you add a teaspoon or up to a tablespoon or so of the ground flax seed. Maybe add some dried blueberries or fresh berries, and have that with skim milk. And that's a very filling, wonderful breakfast. But what you've done is you've added soluble gummy fiber in the oats that lowers cholesterol. Mm-hmm. You've added the antioxidants in the berries. You've added the good fat in the nuts and seeds and fiber. And then you've added flax, which when you have it in the ground seed, you actually get all the benefit from that fiber that's in there to lower cholesterol, plus the fat. And so that would be what you'd call a super-duper breakfast, because it's easy and it's fast and it tastes good. And you could throw a little brown sugar on there, or molasses, or a little honey. And have it with skim milk or a skim yogurt or non-fat yogurt, and you'd be in great shape.
No, I've never tasted flax mm-hmm. that I know of.
You know?
So what does it taste like? And could you incorporate it into a chili or
sure.
a soup?
You could. It tastes, I would say it tastes a little bit nutty, maybe almost like a nut, but a little bit different, because you do have that kind of fat flavor in it. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit, sometimes people will say it, you know, to just take a spoon of it, it's gritty or a little bit, you know, it's mm-hmm. not necessarily something you do that with, although some of my clients do. But you'd want to mix it in something, and it kind of takes on the flavor of whatever you put it in. So okay. let's say if you mix it in yogurt, you're not necessarily going to taste it, probably. But if you have it in oatmeal, that doesn't have much flavor itself. You might taste a little bit if you don't sweeten the oatmeal. Yeah. But it kind of tastes a little bit nutty, I would say.
So it would go along with, let's say I could put a little bit into mashed sweet potato.
Sure. It'd be great in mashed sweet potatoes. It's great in cottage cheese. It would be great in a muffin, or sometimes I've added them to brownies or any baked goods or things like that. You know, and you could add it really into pasta sauce, or add it into anything that's creamy, or a casserole or that kind of thing as well. Or some people just spread it on top of even cold cereal, or mix it in a glass of orange juice.
How long does it last in the fridge?
If you're careful with it, in other words, if you have it, keep it in that container and then maybe put it in a Ziploc bag or put it in an airtight container. Mm-hmm. It would probably last a month or two. I don't know that I'd keep it longer than that. I've sometimes kept them too long, and you can smell them, and if they smell a little rancid, then you'd want to dump them. But that's an easy thing to add. So if listeners were saying, well, what could I do this month that would be something simple to boost my nutrition, trying the flax is helpful. And, of course, flax, because it does have those fats, can serve as a little bit of a blood thinner. But the most obvious side effect, I guess, of using flax for most people is it just usually makes you a little more regular, because it's a good fiber. It's, you know, so you would add maybe, again, I would try a teaspoon or two to begin with. You could go up to 2 tablespoons a day mm-hmm. of ground flax. That wouldn't be too much. But it is a natural anti-constipatory agent, so it works real well in that way too. So for a lot of people, that's a really nice benefit as well. And so it's good. Probably the best resource for flax, I don't have the exact website here, but the Flax Council of Canada has put out a lot of really good information on flax, and they have information about the nutrition and how it's made and recipes and everything. So that's a great resource.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move is with us this afternoon. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with a telephone call this afternoon in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We've got a couple of listeners waiting to talk with us. We go first to a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi, yes. Actually, I have been using your recommendation on the flax. I haven't been grinding it up, and I'm wondering, is that a crucial step, or what's your thoughts on that?
Well, you can get the flax in the actual seed and grind it yourself in a coffee grinder or in a small grinder, and that may be the freshest way to have it. So, you know, if I said the best absolute way, if you had the time and the energy to do that, is you could grind your own even every few days or every week and still keep it in the fridge in an airtight container or the freezer. That may be the ultimate best way, but the most important thing is to actually use it. So if you feel like that would be another extra step that you might not always do, then just buy the ground flax itself, the flaxseed meal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine too. I mean, and what you'd want to do is just make sure that you close it right away and put it right back into the refrigerator so it has a lower chance of spoiling or oxidizing. But either way would be fine. I mean, they're both going to be great benefit. The one thing I sometimes see clients doing is they just eat the flax seeds themselves without grinding them. Or, you know, they'll be in a lot of products. You'll see actual flaxseed in cereal because, of course, it's tough to have that ground in the cereal and stay and not get rancid. So it's still beneficial that way as a fiber. But what happens is those little seeds are really tough for the body to break down. So they'll just go out when you go to the bathroom and you won't really get the benefit from all the oils and everything.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
That's
You're
great.
Very welcome. Let's take another call. A listener in Danville waiting for us on line four. Hello.
Hi, can I ask about soy milk?
Mm-hmm.
I use 1% regular milk, mixing it with 1/3 soy milk, usually from Walmart. Is that okay?
Sure, that's a great way to do it. I mean, another food that can be helpful for the heart and may help decrease lipids a little bit is soy. And so mixing the soy milk with 1% is great. 1% milk is fine. It's, you know, a little bit of fat. Skim milk has virtually no fat or very little. 1% has a little bit, but I would never worry about 1% being too much in the diet. For a lot of people, it tastes a little bit better than skim, and so it's just a teeny bit more fat. And mixing that with soy is a great idea. The thing I would look at is just make sure your soy milk is probably non-fat, because you can get soy milk that's higher in fat, higher in calories too. But mixing those together, then you get the benefit from the soy, and then you're still getting the good protein from both of them. You're getting calcium from both of them, so that's great.
Isn't the fat from the soy superior to that from regular whole milk?
It is. It's, you know, that'd be a better place to get more of the fat if you wanted to have something that's a higher fat product. But it probably just depends on your, again, how much fat you're taking in totally. But you're right. The soy beans themselves or soy products that have the fat is more of a monounsaturated fat. So whereas the milk fat is more saturated fat or more the type that might raise cholesterol. So you're exactly right. If you're going to have fat in there, it's better to have it from the soy end, actually.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other listener questions are invited for dietitian Susan Kundrat. 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Toll-free 800-222-9455 is our toll-free number, 800-222-WILL. Well, I want to go back to seeds and nuts and butters, nut butters. What's a serving and how many servings do you want to have a week?
Well, a serving is about a quarter cup of nuts.
That's for nuts.
Or seeds. Okay. Or about 2 tablespoons of peanut butter. So a serving in general is roughly about 200 calories. It'll vary a little bit. And that ends up being a good ounce of protein, maybe even a little bit more. And so it's not a lot. So, for example, if you're sitting there with a can of peanuts and thinking, oh, this is great, so I'm going to eat the whole can tonight, that could be your calorie needs for the day because they do add up fast. So that's the only thing.
You're,
The Almond Board puts out a little container, kind of like the old Sucrets containers, you know, those little containers about that size. You know, it's about a quarter cup worth of nuts and says this is, you have this serving every day. And it wouldn't be too much to have a serving every day. You know, for some of my clients who need the extra calories or for some athletes, I really want them to have two or three servings of nuts and seeds a day because they need the calories. And so this is a great way to get protein and a great way to get iron and fiber and everything else. But for most of us, if you had a quarter cup of nuts a day, that would be great. So one thing that works really well for a lot of people is to add maybe two tablespoons for breakfast. So add that in your cereal or add that in your oatmeal or whatever, maybe peanut butter on whole grain toast or something. And then later in the day, you just have maybe two tablespoons with an apple for a snack. Or you have a tablespoon of peanut butter on a banana. That'd be a perfect snack because, you know, a good snack that's satisfying is something that has protein, fat, and carbs. And so if you mix fruit with nuts, automatically you get all those things. And so that might be just a small amount. But if in your day you had 200, 250 calories of nuts or seeds every day, that wouldn't be too much. Even if you ended up having, you know, a little flax in the morning plus your nuts and seeds, that'd be great because then you'd be getting a lot of the good fat that would be protective and helpful too.
Okay. You mentioned that you brought another another pamphlet or another handout with you today, and it's all about beans. And I want to tell folks who are listening that if we'd be happy to send copies of these two handouts from Susan out to you if you're interested. All you have to do is drop us a self-addressed stamped envelope to the Afternoon Magazine, WILL, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, 61801. And I'll give the address again a little bit later. I also wanted to mention that coming up on Wednesday at 10 o'clock on Focus 580, Doyle Moore, the unofficial chef in residence for Focus 580, will be David Inge's guest. And they're going to talk about sodium, about salt, and how to bump up the flavor of foods when you've been told, knock off the salt.
Excellent.
Cut it back. So I just wanted to mention that as we're talking about heart health this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Let's take another call. A listener from Rockford, line four. Hi.
Howdy there. I have a question about your flax oil and flax seeds. What's wrong with eating some linseed meal or taking a little raw linseed oil?
Well, that would actually be good, too. You know, the oils themselves, linseed oil included, would be a good addition to the diet, just like using more olive oil is a great addition to the diet because, again, it adds more of the monounsaturated fat. It adds more of the good fat. So flax has become, well, you know, very popular with being added to foods and being available. But like you mentioned, the linseed or linseed oil would be great, too. Really what we want to shoot for is getting away from foods that are necessarily, you know, deep fat fried or fatty meats or foods that might have more trans fat, which would be fat that's kind of moved into the saturated fat type category in processing like crackers and cookies and things like that, and more to these actual natural oils and seeds.
Well, and we can buy the raw linseed oil at the hardware store, and we can buy the linseed meal at the feed store.
Well, that's why it's so good for the animals, too. But, yeah, I mean, I think in general what we're going to see is more availability of all kinds of nuts and seeds. And, you know, hemp seeds are very popular now. And there you see a lot more different kinds of nuts and seeds in general in the stores. And I think it's, you know, as long as they're palatable and it's something that people like and we can find a way to add them to foods and those kinds of things, I think it's generally a very good help.
And then what do we do about vitamin D if we cut out the dairy fat and use sunscreen so we don't get much benefit from the sun? What do we do for vitamin D?
Well, the vitamin D is a big issue, and that's where people need to understand that even if their cholesterol is high, they can use the skim products that are D-fortified. So you don't necessarily have to cut the D out from that angle. They're, you know, fortified with A and D, and you still get those nutrients. And then, you know, that brings up a whole other issue because we're finding, you know, more and more people low in vitamin D and how that's related to so many different, potentially related to so many different concerns that I think everything's being revisited right now with vitamin D in terms of recommendations. You know, now we say Well, be outside for a little while without sunscreen, maybe for 10 or 15 minutes without the sunscreen, so you can get the benefit from the vitamin D, you know, from the sun. And so we're seeing some other, you know, other recommendations coming out because we want to make sure people are getting enough vitamin D. The biggest concern there is to have your vitamin D checked, levels checked, and make sure that you're in the normal range. And if you're not, to make sure that you know how much to take supplement-wise, because that has been a big concern for sure.
And I want to mention that probably if you're going to be ingesting oils, you want to make sure they're food grade.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's a really good point. Any food that you know, what's appropriate, it would be something that is on the GRAS list, or it's generally recognized as safe in terms of our food supply, and that you would be purchasing in a grocery store or in a place that sells the food grade. That's exactly right.
Okay. Anything else, caller from Rockford?
No, I believe that's all. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thanks for the call. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn, registered dietitian. Susan Kundrot with us today. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-WILL, and toll-free 800-222-WILL, 800-222-9455. Well, why is adding fiber to the diet, what's the link there? How does that react with blood cholesterol? We know it reduces it, but why?
Mm-hmm. Well, what fiber does, especially what we'd call soluble fiber, or if you think about the foods you eat, try to think about foods you eat that would gel or look like gummy fibers. And so automatically we'd kind of think, okay, oatmeal. A lot of people don't like oatmeal because of that gooiness of the oatmeal, where that gooiness is actually the soluble fiber, beta-glucan in particular, which is a certain type of fiber. And when you eat that and it gets into your gut, it actually binds with some of the bile acids that form cholesterol or would make more cholesterol. And so what's happening is you're decreasing cholesterol naturally because the body can't make as much. And so it's kind of scooping up, I guess you would say, some of the things that make cholesterol in the body, and you're just taking them out of the system when you go to the bathroom. So these types of fibers, the things that I would think of mostly would be, of course, oatmeal and barley and beans, any kind of beans or lentils or peas, things like that. Or most fruits and vegetables have some soluble fiber. But if you look at something like beef barley soup, or you just look at barley and you see that it's kind of gooey like that, that's a good sign that it's going to be helpful to maybe help kind of hook on to some of those cholesterol products and take them out of the system.
Okay. What about oat cereals that are not oatmeal?
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the oat cereals are still high in soluble fiber. There are some oat brand cereals, of course. There are oat square type cereals that are out there that are good sources of soluble fiber as well. And often if they're a good source, then if you look on the label, you'll see the carbohydrate, then you'll see the fiber, and then it'll actually say soluble fiber on there. So even Cheerios, for example, or those type of oat cereals, usually 3 cups of that a day is about enough soluble fiber that's shown to lower cholesterol. Or maybe a cup of the actual oat bran, or maybe a cup and a half of the oatmeal. So when you get into the dry cereal, sometimes you have to eat more of them. But, you know, a general Cheerio type cereal would be fewer calories per cup too, by far, than oatmeal. So sometimes for clients, they can do things like have oatmeal in the morning and then later for a snack, maybe oat squares or Cheerios as part of their snack, maybe with some nuts, and then you'd be in real good shape, maybe a little dried fruit. So that way you're getting a couple servings a day of the soluble fiber, and then that's helpful. But that's what these foods do. And the other handout that I brought is all about beans and adding beans to your diet. And of course, beans are inexpensive. They, again, if you break a bean apart when it's cooked, you can see how gummy that is. Things like chili or lentil soup, or lentils are wonderful because you only have to cook up about 5 minutes, so it doesn't take long at all.
Yeah.
Or using any kind of bean, even canned beans. Again, we get into the sodium part, but you can get low-sodium canned beans.
Yeah, there are a lot more of those now, and then I would also imagine that by rinsing them well, you remove some of that material.
You remove some of the sodium by rinsing it. And I always think if you're making a vegetable soup, I made a big pot of vegetable soup. In fact, it had so much gummy fiber that it looked like it had a lot of liquid in it when I made it. And then when we went to put it in the fridge, was all dried up. So I thought, well, that's part of that gummy fiber.
That's what I say about split pea soup. It's a soup that keeps on giving.
Yes, it does.
So, you know, you start off and you have it one night and then you put it away and you've got to add more liquid to it the next time around. So,
right.
The soup that keeps on giving. Let's go and take another call. This is a listener on a cell phone on line one. Hi.
Hi there. I've got a quick question for you. I'd gotten a call last week from my doctor saying that he needed me to come in to start taking some vitamin B12 shots, one a week for 4 weeks and then once a month because my vitamin B12 was extremely low. I wondered, is there some advice you could give me about foods that are good for those that are vitamin B12 deficient?
Mm-hmm.
And I will hang up and listen.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, the first thing I'd say about vitamin B12 is after about age 50 or just as we get older and the intestinal system kind of changes in the body, we don't absorb vitamin B12 as well as we used to. So it's one of those vitamins. There are other ones too, but particularly vitamin B12 just doesn't get absorbed as well. Part of it's related to how the intestinal system works and the acidity and all these things. But so really anybody age 50 or so or older should be on a multivitamin with 100% B12. So that's kind of the first thing I would say is that this just naturally happens to the body because we don't absorb it as well. So that would be the first thing I'd say for listeners. Second thing I would say is that B12 is found, unless it's supplemented in a food, it's found in animal foods. And so, for example, if someone's eating meat, they're getting B12. If they're getting other animal-based foods like milk or something, you're going to have some B12 in it. So B12, if you're eating a wide variety of animal foods, you're certainly getting it in the diet. And then the question is it being absorbed well or is it not? And so that's one thing that's not always checked. It's not always tested. But B12 is something you probably should ask to have tested, you know, every 3 or 4 years or so at least, I would say, or maybe even more often you can talk to your physician. But certainly on a yearly basis, I would have it tested after age 50 just because it can become low just because you're not absorbing it very well. Or maybe people are eating healthier and they're eating less meat and they're cutting down on animal foods, trying to eat more of a vegetarian diet, which is certainly healthy, but then that is one thing you're not going to get as much of. And so I would say the food sources for the caller would be animal foods, lean red meats and fish and milk and those kinds of things. And they can certainly be low fat and still have B12. But probably no matter how much B12 you would eat in food, if you're not absorbing it, you know, you're still not going to get it in the system. So have that checked and have a multivitamin. It can be just 100% multivitamin that's got 100% of all the B vitamins, including B12, which those would typically have. And then if you're low, you may need more B12 in a supplement, or you may get to the point where you need to have the B12 injections. And so if B12 is low, it can cause a lot of problems in the body, a lot of different things. But we think of it certain anemias, or we think of problems with blood cells or other things. But it's just not unusual as we get older for it to be low. And so often low B12 will be picked up if you're in the hospital for something else and they happen to find it, or there's some other medical problem going on and they might just check B12. But that's something to be, you know, to have checked just right along with your vitamin D.
And next we talk with a listener in Chicago on line four. Hello.
Hi. Going back to the topic of fiber, I found personally that rice bran is a good alternative to oat as a general fiber addition. Everything from your cereals, hot or cold cereals, to your soups, and also into your baking if you choose to add it to baking. It's an excellent source of fiber as well as a high protein content. And so I'd toss that in because somehow or other the concentration and focus has been on oats, but there are other good sources of grains that have fiber and nutritional value. And so I didn't mention that the rice bran is an excellent one.
Well, thanks for that.
Yeah, thank you. We don't think of using rice bran as often because we might think of just using the rice itself. And, of course, brown rice or whole grain rice has a lot of fiber, too. I mean, it's a great fiber source. Or just the rice bran that you can buy separately like you say, is a wonderful source of fiber, too.
I want to thank the listener for his call. We've got about 4 or 5 minutes left in this portion of the program, maybe a little bit more. If you'd like to talk with registered dietitian Susan Kundrat, give us a call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Well, how can we incorporate beans? Are there other ways we can incorporate beans into the diet that aren't strictly, soups, chilies?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing to think about is anytime you have salsa, to just add beans to your salsa. So, you know, if you're having salsa and chips and you've got that at home and you have a can of salsa, well, rinse a can of black beans or any
Good
kind of
idea.
Beans and just throw it right in the salsa. You're just going to eat that right with it. You can chop up a avocado and put in there too, and then you've got the monounsaturated fat, you got the fiber, and of course tomatoes and salsa with all the good things in there, just really good for you anyway. So the big issue there would be sodium, so you'd want to kind of
what you're dipping in there
and what you're dipping in there exactly. So if you can get those baked chips or the baked purple corn chips or something, those would be even better. But yeah, that's an easy way to do it. And also the other thing I'd think about is just think about refried beans, because refried beans you can do just so much with. I mean, if you have just a whole grain tortilla or even just a regular soft tortilla and you want to take something for lunch, just spread refried beans on it, a little bit of cheese and any veggies and roll it up and you're ready to go. So refried beans would be simple and fast and inexpensive, easy way to make things. And the other thing you could think about doing is even if you're one of those people that, oh, I'm just going to open up a can of soup tonight. Well, there are a lot of soups now that have beans added, a lot of minestrone soups or even low-sodium soups that have beans. But the other thing you could do is even if you're having chicken noodle soup or whatever you might have, a regular mm-hmm. vegetable soup that you open up, then you could certainly rinse some beans, canned beans, and just put some in there as well. Or just cook it with lentils in them. Add lentils to the soup and cook it long enough, 5, 6, 7 minutes, so the lentils get soft. And so now you have all this fiber plus regular soup, and there really wasn't anything you had to do. That was very difficult to make that happen. And then there's always the infamous bean brownies that I make. So you can make those too. You can just rinse a can of white beans, usually cannellini beans or white beans. Then you just...
What a sneaky thing to do.
It's very sneaky, but it's very
Does
moist.
Does it taste good?
It tastes good, but they must be frosted, I will say. Because you can taste them. We'll taste the beans a little bit if you don't frost them. But you can blend up that with just a little bit of... Put in egg whites, put in a little bit of olive oil. Sometimes I'll put in a little yogurt, and I'll mix that in with a brownie mix.
Okay.
And what it adds is adds all the moisture, and it adds the brownies look maybe a little bit more cakey and a little more dense.
Uh-huh.
But then just frost it with a little frosting, and it's really good. So you have high-fiber brownies.
Okay. And on top of salads?
Sure. On top of salads is great. Yeah, think to use that on top of salads.
Yeah.
Because that'd be, you know.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I don't really think about that, but I think that would be great, chickpeas or...
Sure.
Black beans. Also, salsa, thinking of a healthy way to eat salsa without the fried chips is an accompaniment, as a condiment to fish or meat.
Sure.
Chicken or fish or
right.
Hamburger, whatever you got.
Mm-hmm. You could add corn in that too, because corn added to salsa is really good. And so you could make that kind of your side dish as opposed to having it with chips. That's right.
Okay. Before we go, I wanted to ask you one more thing. In terms of looking for a fish oil supplement, there seems to be, there seems to be so many.
Mm-hmm.
How do we read the labels on those products?
Well, basically what you're looking for, and it's going to depend on what you're using it for and how much you need, but most of the
just
soft
a little,
gels.
Yeah, and just a modest insurance. You don't want to have 3,000 times what you...
Right.
What the recommendation is. So just a little modest insurance, what mm-hmm. are we looking for?
Well, you're probably looking for 1 gram, a fish oil capsule with 1 gram of fish oil mm-hmm. total in it. And it'll break down and say the different types of fatty acids and things. But if it's a pure fish oil supplement and it's 1 gram, that's usually 1 soft gel. That's
okay.
about how much that is generally. And most of the time for beneficial purposes, you're looking at 1 to 3 grams a day. And
mm-hmm.
that goes along with almost anybody who has high triglycerides will probably be put on a fish oil supplement because it does lower triglyceride levels as well. But usually that's 1. So that would be about the amount for most people that you're going to see that would be beneficial. So,
okay.
And one more thing I might mention, because I just remembered, tomorrow I have one of the cookbook clubs, and I know some of our listeners come.
Excellent.
And that's over at the ARC Instructional Kitchen over on campus, 201 East Peabody Drive. And if you just come in the main ARC and go downstairs to the Instructional Kitchen, it's just a free class the first Tuesday of every month at 12:15. And we're going to be looking at the Biggest Loser Family Cookbook tomorrow. So we've got a kind of a nice little easy pizza to make and a few other things. And so everyone's welcome. It's just about a 45-minute, just open to the public in the community
great.
Class. So
I wish I could be there with you.
I might have to save something and bring it over for
okay.
you.
Okay. Well, I'm here in the studio.
Okay.
You know where to find me.
Very good.
And we'll see you in March.
See you in March, National
okay.
Nutrition Month.
All right. And wear red on Friday.
Okay, I will.
Okay, will do. And don't forget that Doyle Moore will be talking about flavoring foods and flavoring your foods and having good food. Good recipes without a lot of salt.
Excellent. Sounds
That's
great.
That's on Wednesday here on AM 580 on Focus 580 with David Inge.